Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me on the phone is a pioneer in near-death experiences. PMH Atwater, as a, survivor of three near-death experiences in 3 months, has written a gaggle, I think that's the appropriate term, of books. I'm holding in my hand the big book of near-death experiences, The Ultimate Guide to What Happens When We Die. She is a presence all around the world in near-death experiences and has been doing this for 38 years and still counting. Thanks for being on the program with us for I'm Spiritual, Damn It. We're really blessed to have you.
Yeah. In fact, it's been 40 years now.
Okay. So I said and counting. I didn't know that video that I was watching was 2 years old. There we go. So, you know, if somebody just Googles your name, they could just sit for hours and hours and be absorbed in information, not to mention grabbing any of your books. And obviously, this started for you from your personal experiences. So for the listener that hasn't been researching you for weeks, as I have, explain to them what happened to you. You didn't just have one near-death experience. You had three.
Yes, we call it the heavenly sledgehammer effect.
And it worked, and it came in threes.
Oh, my word, did it ever work.
Yeah.
The first was January 2, 1977, living in Boise, Idaho. I'm an Idahoan by birth. Lived most of my life in Idaho. And 2 days later, that was caused by a miscarriage. 2 days later, major thrombosis dislodged, and followed by the worst case of phlebitis a specialist had ever heard of, let alone seen.
Wow.
Then March 29, so that's the third month later, had, well, they don't really know for sure. They don't know whether I had a heart attack. What was it?
Wow.
Whatever it was, I was dead again, no longer had vital signs. So I went through those three, boom, boom, boom. Then later that fall, we're talking, October, November, I had three major relapses, one of which was total adrenal failure. I was working at the time as a bank analyst. Yeah, I was a bank analyst. With a blood pressure reading of 60 over 60, which means I wasn't doing too well. I was, Jennifer, most people seem to forget that most near-death experiences come from violence or trauma.
Correct.
So you've got a body to rebuild. And I was one of those cases where I had to relearn how to stand, how to walk, how to crawl. How to run, how to climb stairs, how to tell the difference between left and right, see properly, hear properly, and rebuild all my belief systems. So I had a lot on my plate.
I would say so. But also with a newly formed knowledge that this is not all that there is.
Well, I wouldn't call it knowledge.
Okay.
I would call it, a challenge is a very tame word, sort of like this burst or this shove into realities beyond anything you have any conception of. And I'm making a big statement there when I say this, because I was very active in metaphysical, esoteric, and psychic groups for a decade before I ever had my experience. I was researching biorhythms. I mean, you name it, I was doing it. I started up Idaho's first nonprofit metaphysical corporation called Inner Forum. I was dealing with people by the thousands, running all kinds of tests. You know, is prayer real? Are these psychic things real? Can we prove them? Can we establish? Can we verify? I was one of those kind of people that I had to. It wasn't enough that I could do it. It wasn't enough that I had verification. I had to test it and verify with hundreds, if not thousands, of other people.
Exactly.
It had to be it had to be on a lot of different levels. So that's the kind of person I was.
And over 7,000 at that last I counted, so I'm sure it's probably up to 10,000 now. What's the total of your interviews with near death?
It's nearly 4,000 adults and children in near death research.
Mm-hmm.
Well over 3,000 in my work I did before I died.
Right.
In researching transformations of consciousness, altered states of consciousness, psychic, all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were doing research on near-death experiences before you had really heard too much of near-death experiences, before you'd really heard of Raymond Moody and these other people who were founders in the field. Exactly.
Never heard of him at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross,
mm-hmm.
who, interestingly enough, I met her at Chicago O'Hare Airport.
Really?
Her plane was late to go to Europe. It was about an hour late, and mm-hmm. I recognized her from her pictures, went up to her, introduced myself, and told her about what happened to me. We sat down on a bench, like a couple of little schoolgirls, and chatted for this hour, mm-hmm. told her all that happened to me, and she was the one that gave me the title, gave me the phrase. Near-death experience. Never heard of it before.
Wow.
She called me a near-death survivor. She did not use the term experiencer.
Mm-hmm.
She never mentioned Raymond Moody, mm-hmm. never mentioned his book, never heard of either one.
Right.
I'm the only one we know of in the world who went out and did her own independent research on the experience, knowing nothing about the classical model.
Right.
Or any other research anybody else was doing. In fact, I didn't know anybody else was doing it. I only knew this is what I had to do because in my third near-death experience, I was told by what I call the voice like none other
mm-hmm.
to do this work. This was not something I chose.
It was a command.
This was something, yeah.
That's
heavenly
a through line.
Mission.
Yes, and that's the thing. A heavenly mission, as you know from doing your research, a lot of times this happens. It's different with children, of course, and I want to talk to you about that in a second. But for the adults that have this and have the memory of it, there is often a mission attached. You were told in that third near death about the three books that you needed to do. You talk very openly about being inspired that you're told a little tap on the shoulder, you got to write another book. Are you done or are you still writing?
Well, I can say this to you.
Okay.
My promise, my commitment is now over with the publication of a manual for developing humans. That's the big one.
Mm-hmm.
Just came out 3 weeks ago.
Very exciting.
A manual for developing humans.
Mm-hmm.
That was the third book I was told to write in my third near-death experience. The companion piece to it mm-hmm. is Future Memory. That was the second book.
Right.
And I tell you, my energy changed. The way I talk changed. The way I look changed after I got this done at the end of last year. And I thought, my word, okay, what's next? And then I suddenly realized, Jennifer, I suddenly realized, now I can choose.
Mm-hmm.
I can do what I want to do.
And what do you want to do?
So I've chosen four more books.
Okay. Oh, is that it?
I'm incurable. I chose four more books.
That's so funny.
And I'm already into one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing research on people who've had a near-death experience between womb
mm-hmm.
and the age of five. I'm going after the little ones because I've noticed something extra special, extra different, that's just going to catch us all with these tiny, tiny children who have near-death experiences, even at birth, even before birth. Yes, you can mm-hmm. have a near-death experience when you're just a
womb,
babe.
Yeah, you're a pile of phlegm, as they would call it.
Right.
Really, you're just an enigma. Yeah.
And, that's a wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I really want to do a book on what I've noticed in the way of science, in the way of body, in the way of medical, in the way of spiritual, on these experiences. I want just one book that encapsulates what I've seen, what I've discovered, mm-hmm. what I've verified. And then, I just might do a book on maybe the extraterrestrial part mm-hmm. of this experience. And then the last one, vignettes on my life.
Perfect. So again, you're going to relax for the next few years.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, right.
And you know, of course, I want to spend a lot of time with my husband, too.
Which is important. And you have a family. And I'm curious, in your 40 plus years of doing this, what do you think you can prove now more easily than we could prove back when you started this journey decades ago? Is there something that now you can just say to the scientific community that poo-poos this? As you say, I love that you say this, science is biased language, which is so very true. And whenever a doctor just says, oh, that's not provable, tell me what you tell them to say, yes, it is.
Well, first of all, we know that these kind of experiences happen to people who are not on drugs.
Right.
Therefore, this idea of the tunnel effect, the way the medical people describe it, is nada, nothing to it.
Right. Or it's not a lack of oxygen to the brain, which has always come up.
No, not at all. Yes. Or the way the eyesight forms into a tunnel as you're dying.
Right.
Forget that kind of stuff.
Right.
Most of the people were not on drugs. In fact, most cases come from the general public, i.e. not in a hospital.
Sure.
The hospital cases are only maybe 12 to 24%.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them come from drownings, they come from accidents, they come from all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Maybe high fever. The big one that catches me, and I hope catches everybody else, is the after effects.
Right.
They're physiological as well as psychological.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking after effects, Jennifer, it's the after effects that validate the experience, not the other way around.
So the spidey senses, the heightened senses of what we say is intuition.
Oh, I love all of that. I mean,
yeah.
that's just a nip
of
the after effects. I mean, it changes brain structure and brain function.
Right.
It changes the nervous system, the digestive system,
right.
Changes skin sensitivity. I could go on and on and on
mm-hmm.
about these changes, and especially with children.
Yeah.
I've been able to show through these IQ tests and all this other kind of stuff that when we talk about heightened intelligence, wow, with kids. Just read the book, The New Children and mm-hmm. Near-Death Experiences.
Right.
I give you the stats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at cases from, we look at cases from, let's say, 3 to 5 years.
Uh-huh. Of children who were 3 to 5 years old?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
As soon as they are able to take IQ tests, i.e. in school.
Right.
They have an IQ of 150 to 160.
Wow.
Those that I've looked at. Now, most of your school teachers will say, well, genius is maybe 136.
Mm-hmm.
Others say, well, it starts at 142.
Mm-hmm.
These are children who have had near-death experiences. You can trace it back. They weren't like that before their experience. They were like that afterward.
Mm-hmm.
And the average, 81%, that's higher than average, are scoring 150 to 160 with no genetic markers to account for it. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. This one little boy, he was a little boy then. He was in northern Georgia, mm-hmm. north of Atlanta.
Right.
And He's, you know, it's about maybe five or maybe about 5 years old at this time, maybe six. Mm-hmm. And he's on the breakfast table in the morning. Mm-hmm. And there's a box of cereal in the middle of the table. And mom and dad and one of the siblings are there. And he reads the front of the box. Mm-hmm. And then he reads everything on top of the box. He reads everything on both sides of the box. He reads everything underneath the box. And he reads everything on the front of the box. And he never touched the box.
Cool. Now that's a party trick. And so
he's a little kid,
and so that means his consciousness was able to go up and view all of these things like you, many people describe in a near-death experience where they can see everything, right? They're up above and able to see it all, and yet here this kid...
That's the most common element.
Right.
Is the out-of-body experience.
Okay.
Well over 60% of the people have that, adults and children.
Okay.
These experiences out-of-body are very vivid. Mm-hmm. Most of them have been verified by third-party testimonials.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff about, well, there's nothing to it. You know, nobody's, you can't prove this. On and on and on that these characters are saying, most of them have had third-party verifications.
Right.
We know they're true.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on people who come back from a near-death experience with a new gift of like a Mandarin language? For example, I have a friend whose brother did have a heart attack while he was working out, and now he speaks fluent Mandarin, and he's never taken a lesson. Is that another lifetime that's coming in to his consciousness currently? What is your explanation
for
something?
Well, we're making a judgment here.
Sure.
When we're saying, well, maybe this is a past life. Maybe they're picking it up from some kind of mental thing that, you know, they connected with. Maybe that's how they got the Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? We don't know for sure. You can make all kinds of jumps in maybe suppose. But we really don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We can't prove it.
Got it.
These people who suddenly are composing music afterward,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, have nothing to do with new music before. Maybe inventing, healing lights,
mm-hmm.
Doing all kinds of different things that they didn't do before,
mm-hmm.
Didn't know before. They're doing afterward.
Right.
And this is common, believe it or not.
Oh, I know. That's the thing.
It's not unusual. It's
common.
Not.
There are a lot of instances in that. And you also talk about how children explained to you that they could see prayers. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Oh, yes. I wish I could show you the pictures.
Yes.
Anyway, what children often see are beams. They call them prayer beams.
Mm-hmm.
And they shoot out from the person saying the prayer to the person who receives the prayer.
Mm.
And so they see these beams shoot out.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the children describe them as rainbow banded, but not like we see a rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Rather bands like maybe you'd find on a snake or little bands,
mm-hmm.
rather than that big horizontal or curved sweep like a bridge that we see colors with a rainbow.
Right.
No, not like a rainbow bridge, rather these bands.
Mm-hmm.
And they see the banded energy just arc out, and usually at the front of it, maybe at the tail of it, it'll be this incredibly bright light.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the kids see see more of a golden white light, mm-hmm. the beam itself, but most of them will see the banded rainbows. So I asked this one little boy, oh, he was about 4 or 5, what it was like when one of those prayer beams hit you. Mm-hmm. And he just started laughing. He says, you just feel tickly all over.
So cute.
Yeah, a little tickles mm-hmm. all over.
Warming and splashes and tickles. I love it. And that's really powerful for the listeners out there to note that when one gives a prayer of intent, of a positive prayer, of course, did anyone report back seeing the opposite, seeing a negative thought and how that affected somebody?
Well, a few did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seemed to shrivel.
Shrivel. Okay. Interesting.
They seemed to shrivel. Mm. Or somehow it either hurt or shriveled, or they just wanted to withdraw from it,
right,
rather than accept it.
Amazing. I love how you say psychic is simply the expansion and acceleration of faculties normal to you. And if we could get rid of that word psychic, which puts these pictures.
Say that again.
Yes, you said it's simply the expansion and acceleration of faculties normal to you. That is what psychic is. That's
it's
what medium is.
Part of our survival skills mm-hmm. that we were given as human beings on the earth plane. It has nothing to do with paranormal or psychic or extra anything.
Mm-hmm. So can people who haven't had a near-death experience tap into these gifts and these senses that you've experienced? Okay, so what can we do if we haven't had a near-death experience? I know you just wrote a whole book about it. Give us a couple. Yes,
get the book.
They
manual
will.
For developing humans.
Yes, get the manual for developing humans immediately. And while you're on your way to the bookstore to buy it, what can they do to help remember that they are expansion and acceleration of faculties normal to you? That is always going on.
Well, my dear, if you would just be more silent,
mm-hmm.
more into quiet, more into meditation, more into contemplation, more into mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
this other extras just begin to bloom by themselves.
Nice.
Yes, you can take classes. Yes, you can have people inspire you.
Mm-hmm.
But the best way, the most wonderful way, is to just be who you are in silence and in joy and in openness and accepting. And they begin to bloom by themselves. Now, yes, it's good to have some training if you can,
mm-hmm.
because that helps you to know what's good and what's not so good, what's helpful and not so helpful. Yes, that's all true, but they will bloom by themselves if you let them, because it's part of you.
Right. It's already there.
If you let it bloom, it's mm-hmm. part of you.
Exactly. You write here in the big book of near-death experiences, you write, Thomas Edison, another great scientist who believed in life after death, claimed that the soul was made up of, quote, life units, and these microscopic particles could rearrange into any form and retain full memory and personality and were indestructible. And he was actually working on a machine that would detect these life units in the environment and allow living individuals to communicate with the dead, but he died before it could be finished. Now, research has found that in almost every ghost haunting and poltergeist, there are certain electrical elements at work. Using electromagnetic field detectors, ghost hunters can monitor these electrical forces because when ghosts are present, the readings are higher than the EMF produced by the electrical appliance. So it's pretty amazing stuff that Thomas Edison also believed in life after death, and yet so many people stand there with their hands on their hips and say, this is weird.
I love the way you said that. That is so cute. Well, you know, when we're researching or even talking about near-death experiences, I want to really honor what that subject is. Mm-hmm. Because we're talking about that edge between life and death. We're talking about breathing and not breathing. Mm-hmm. We're talking about sorrow and joy. We're talking about love and the heart and hate and bitterness. We're talking about all these aspects of life that come together, whether we want it or not. Mm-hmm. And we have to face what they are. And, you know, that's the incredible thing about the near-death experience. You have to just sort of stop whatever your dreams are, your wishes, your beliefs. You have to stop and face the ultimate. And I think that's why so many people are drawn to near-death cases or shy away from near-death cases. They don't want to face what is ultimate about life. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you really are honest about the near-death experience, what it shows you is more, and what it reveals is more about life than it does death. Mm-hmm. And what it's showing us is what we really are. And we have to stop and think, or at least be open to receive the idea of, oh, maybe we're a soul. Maybe this human body that we're living in, maybe this is an incredible gift. And maybe this is something that helps us then. Mm-hmm. To explore all kinds of things. This idea of being alive on the earth plane, this idea of wearing a body, this idea of being someone, then all of a sudden we faced this incredible ultimate reality. That there's more to life than we can imagine. There's more to being a human being than we can imagine. Mm-hmm. There's more to this whole thing we call ultimate. There's more to God than G-O-D. Mm-hmm. There's more to breath than just breathing. And it really sits us down. You know, those people who talk about, you know, psychism and spirituality and religion and all these incredible things, and we have to sort of do a 180 here and say, but wait a minute, right. There's more to this.
Why do you think we come here? Do we come here to learn and evolve? Do we pick our parents to make it challenging? Is that all divinely guided? And do you believe there are no accidents? Now that you've died three times, do you think that was part of the life plan? Or was that, random chaos? Wrong place, wrong time, or wrong circumstances? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you believe there are accidents?
First of all, nobody can say for sure.
Yes, right.
What we can say is how we feel, mm-hmm. what our thoughts are, what we've been able to prove for ourselves.
Right.
I do not believe that life is any kind of an accident. Mm-hmm. I have found that that we are co-creators with the Creator. Mm-hmm. That we're here to co-create with the Creator. Whether you want to call the Creator G-O-D, or if you want to call it Allah, or Core, or Source, God, I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's all this. It's this incredible power, this incredible strength, this incredible knowingness, this incredible intelligence mm-hmm. that seems to want companionship, mm-hmm. and that if you want to play with that idea, we seem to be thoughts from the mind of God.
Mm-hmm.
And those thoughts, those souls, spring out from that incredible intelligence. And in that force or that ability to move and explore and go beyond the Creator,
mm-hmm.
that's when we allow ourselves or begin somehow to realize, whoops, we can create too.
Right.
And all these things that we might be able to do. And we start to do them. And sometimes we get stuck in our creations.
Mm-hmm.
But this avenue, this wonderment of like, whoops, I can be a human being. Whoops, I can have a body. Whoops, I can live on, the earth plane. On this incredibly wonderful blue ball that we call Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things can happen. And, you know, down through the ages, I don't care how far back you go, there are stories and legends and prayers and knowingness about, yes, we're here. We are children of God. We're part of this incredible creation. And if you allow yourself to expand your consciousness and receive or explore those kinds of ideas,
mm-hmm.
then it helps you then to maybe accept that there might be a way of this. And, you know, things like meeting the ultimate bring you to that.
Right. And it's hard for us to remember that who haven't met with the ultimate. And so for those who are stuck in the daily grind and needing validation or proof, you know, and thankfully your manual will help people with those things. But just hearing those stories, like the children seeing a prayer, can you give us another couple stories that you hear a lot of feedback about or that stick in your memory as sort of game changers for you that you hold with you in your daily life that you sort of remember more easily than others, perhaps?
Oh, well, all I can do is laugh here because normal to me is any kind of soul that wants to go by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it wears a body or not doesn't matter. I'm often visited by all kinds of beings. And I've said, though I have yet to do it, that I'm going to put a sign on over our front door that says "Welcome," whether you wear a body or not.
Some people would say, "Go away! You haven't been invited today." But you're saying that, welcome.
Those kinds of things are normal,
right?
And the kinds of wonderful things that most of us.
Mm-hmm.
Begin to relax and fill our lives with is that everything is alive and everything is intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the trees, the grass, a stone, a piece of wood, everything is alive.
Mm-hmm.
And everything has intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And everything makes choices.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped me to honor the world in which I live, mm-hmm. and everything in it, that there is so many different levels. And just because I'm seeing with my 3D eyes,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that's all there is.
Right. And what do you think that you do know that there is when we die? There is. What do you think you know for sure? Because it's hard to know for sure, but what do you think you know for sure?
I know for sure that I'll go on.
Mm-hmm.
I know for sure that there will be all kinds of environments,
mm-hmm.
and places and energies and lights and movement.
Mm-hmm.
I know that for sure. I don't know where I'll go or what my choices will be. I'll save that for when that moment comes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so unlimited. I have a hard time with the idea of limits.
Sure.
How can there be any limits? Because there aren't any limits. And we can talk about all these kind of incredible esoteric things, and then we have to come back, I think, to how this affects people. And I want to share this idea of job, this idea of mission, mm-hmm. this idea of what are you going to do afterward? You know, there's this long list mm-hmm. of people who have had near-death experiences now who have gone on to do some pretty incredible things. I want to talk about Marcel Vogel. Mm-hmm. This is the crystal man. Mm-hmm. Anybody who knows anything about crystals knows the name Marcel Vogel. I don't know anybody who knew anything more about crystals than him. He died of pneumonia, double lobar pneumonia, at the age of 6.
Mm-hmm.
He revived. And then this voice spoke to him. He wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 6-year-old kid. He wrote it down as best he could.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, this voice is saying now, quote, you will be a phosphor chemist. You will do pioneering work in luminescence. You will write a book and create your own business.
Wow.
Now, this is a 6-year-old kid. Marcel Vogel went on to be one of the best inventors for IBM, mm-hmm. at 32 patents.
Wow.
The book he wrote was The Luminescence of Liquids and Solids and Their Practical Application.
Mm-hmm.
His business was the Vogel Luminescence Corporation.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's wow what he did. And then we've got Olof Sundén, a Swede.
Mm-hmm.
There was an accident or a problem during his tonsillectomy. He was about 14. He died. He had the world and the universe and how it was made up all shown to him. He came back, didn't tell anybody because he knew nobody would believe it.
Mm-hmm.
He waited until he was got his college degree, got his sheepskin.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went back and he took all of the things he was shown and he invented them. He has 100 chemical patents.
Jeez.
The incredible things that he was able to do, Olof Sundén, mm-hmm. In Sweden. We go on and on and on with these kind of cases. One of those that really captures me, the book is called The Man Who Planted Trees.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the secondary title goes on and on and on,
mm-hmm.
By Jim Robbins. Jim Robbins was just a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
He was writing about David Millarich,
mm-hmm.
who had his near-death experience as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And he was told in his near-death experience that he was to save the largest, oldest, most champion trees in the world before global warming killed them.
Wow.
He had to save their genes, their DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And he saved hundreds of them.
That was by Jim Robbins. So, you know, it's interesting. Paul Perry is a journalist, I'm sure you know of, who's written, I think, 9 books on near-death experiences. And also as a journalist, not as a person who's experienced one himself.
Yeah, he was the co-writer. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, wonderful. And so he said, when I talked with him, he was talking about how what impressed him the most were the children, because they aren't able to go out and do research on what near-death experiences do, and I'm sure you experience this as well, because they're not out comparing notes, but they still have so many similarities on their reflection of their experiences. That is what really made him go from skeptic to possible believer. He still says he's a skeptic, a healthy skeptic, as a journalist is, but he says it was the children that really did it for him. And so I wonder if that was part of the deal for you as well. Having been an experiencer, I bet you just love talking to the children.
Well, sure. Mm-hmm. I can talk on their level.
Yeah.
By the way, when you're interviewing children, you cannot have your eyes higher than their eyes.
Mm.
If you do, then you're an authority. You're an authority, mm-hmm. and they will not respond to you in the same manner, and they won't tell you everything.
You're right. As you say, your dad was a policeman, and he taught you the uh-huh. body says more than the mouth does. So you have
to have to have your eyes on the same level. Right. So they're if they're very, very little, guess where you are?
On the floor.
You're on the floor.
Exactly.
You're absolutely on the floor.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've noticed about the after effects, the adults tend to come back more childlike. The children tend to come back more mature and adult-like.
That is fascinating, because yes,
invariably.
I do. Yes, I know a woman who had an NDE. She came back very childlike. And then mm-hmm. all of the children experiences that I've read about, you say they have this higher intelligence that's just off the charts. So that is really, really amazing. I'm so grateful that we had a chance to chat with you. PMH Atwater can be found on her website, PMHATWATER.com. You can get all of her books, including the new manual, which we all need as humans if you have not had a near-death experience, to help us gauge through the muck and really enjoy the bliss. And I'm going to say this part again, because it came out of your mouth, PMH, and I want to repeat it, that unconditional love is love without an object. So let's remember that. And psychic is simply the expansion and acceleration of faculties normal to you. So go out and tap into that expansion and acceleration of your faculties that's already wired within you, and do what you can to tap into it always, because it's hard work, but it is attainable, isn't it?
It is. Whether you want to get it through prayer, whether you want to get it through religion, whether you want to get it through spirituality, whether you want to do it on your own, doesn't matter.
No. As long as you make the
first
step. You
can become more of who and what you are.
Excellent.
Did you know that the old ancient term and sound of God was Hu?
Hugh.
So the idea of human is God man. Quite literally, human is God man.
Wow.
So we were all destined, we were all given that ability to wake up and realize we are gods in the making. You know, if you go to the Bible, if you go to any of the world's great religions, they will somehow say what is clearly said in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, black and white, ye are gods in the making.
Mm-hmm.
A manual for developing humans invites you to be who you really are, to be fully who you are, to be a full human being, because if you do, you're going to become a God in the making. That's mm-hmm. who you are. This is the wake-up time. It is time. It is time to wake up and to quit this nonsense of just saying we're here to be spiritual. Uh-uh. We're here to be fully human.
Right. Right. And it's not
just
we have to live in this body, in this world. We can't just all go off to a mountain and pray. That's not going to get us very far.
Spirituality reality is part of it.
Yeah, but it's not all of it.
The whole thing.
Yeah, it's not all of it.
You know, I come to, with all these years, 40 years, all these thousands of people, I've come to respect humanness. Mm-hmm. The fact that I'm wearing a human body, that I am a human being, I've come to respect that as being one of the greatest gifts God could ever have given me.
So don't ever doubt that, listeners, as you drive your car or you're stuck in traffic or you're loathing that birthday party, whatever. Get out of complaint, get out of victimhood, and get into who you really are and embrace it all. PMHatwater.com is where you need to go. PMH, thank you for being a part of the program. Stay spiritual, damn it. Or I should say, Hugh, dang it.
Cute.
Oh my goodness. I have a lot of reading to do to keep up with you and writing to do, and I can't wait for the next four books to come out. As I've only gotten through three of yours, it's an amazing body of work. So thank you for coming back to write it all out, because if you hadn't died and lived to talk about it, we wouldn't have it documented. So it's an amazing experience, and to anyone out there listening,
that was my job.
That was your job, and you listened. So way to go. I'm Jennifer Weigel. I'm Spiritual Dammit. We'll see you next time.